everybody. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Work Institute's Lunch and Learn for today, Wednesday, January 10th. This is Joe Scarlett. I want to welcome you all with us today. The topic we're going to talk about is building a customer-focused culture, which, as those of you who heard me talk before, certainly know how passionate I am about that subject and how important that is in giving yourself competitive advantage. With us today is Mike Esterday. I've known Mike. We were just talking about that before. I've known Mike since 1989, and Mike is the CEO of Integrity Solutions, and it's a company based on selling and teaching sales techniques all over the world. So we're thrilled to have Mike with us today. Mike, welcome. And with that, let me turn it over to our hostess, Mary Fink, the world-famous Mary Fink.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you, Mike, for being with us. We're really glad to have you here. This is a topic that I think is close to a lot of people. We hear a lot of talk about it. We read a lot about it. But as you say, reading about it and doing it aren't the same thing. So we want to talk about some actions that we can probably take today and gather some information from what you've learned in your years in the business. So I guess my first question is, it's a so what? Why should we be concerned with building this customer-focused culture? Why? What's involved with changing a culture, and why would we want to go to the effort?
Well, as you think, first of all, thanks, Mary and Joe, for having me with you today. And you know, there's so much talk about customer service and customer focus, but too often I see it's just something on the wall, and the company talks about it. They've got this mission and so forth, but nobody really knows what it is and doesn't really live it. What I've found is that companies that truly are successful, not just short-term, but long-term, they have a customer-focused culture. And sometimes, hopefully we'll talk about what that really means, but a customer-focused culture is not just the external customer, but it's also talking about internally.
Right.
In fact, there's a study called the Service Profit Chain that was done by Harvard. It's actually done quite a few years ago, and it's been redone multiple times. There have been books come out on it. And the question was, what is it that really drives success in all kinds of companies? So the question at the bottom of this is, what drives profitability and growth? And what they found was, it's really a chain of things. What drives that is customer loyalty. You have customers that are happy to keep coming back.
Right.
And the question is, what drives that? It was customer satisfaction. Well, what drives that? It's value that they get. They're not going to come back if they don't get value. So when they looked at what drives all of that part, the top part of the chain is really internal, mm-hmm. and that is the employees. You've got to have employees that are productive, that are loyal, that are satisfied themselves, and it's leadership at the top of that chain that drives the whole thing. So a lot of times clients ask me, how do I get more customer satisfaction and loyalty? And I say, well, you can do that by training those people, but it really starts at the top and how you treat your internal people.
Exactly, because if I'm not treated well, I don't care how I treat other people. And you can tell that when you walk into any organization. It can be fast food, it can be a doctor's office, it can be a retail establishment. If you can sense the kind of treatment that people are getting by the way they treat you.
One of the things that Tractor Supply that we really focused on was, I used to like to say, and we say it today, is learn a customer name a week. And that may sound simple. At the end of the year, you're supposed to know 50 customers' names. And some people really do that. And it's not unusual to see a customer come into a Tractor Supply store and the cashier who's at the register and saying, good morning, Mr. Esterday. How are you today?
Yeah.
That is worth
huge.
It's everything. I always like to kid around and say you can charge 10% more if you know a customer's name, which we obviously don't do, but that bonds a customer to you. If somebody knows your name, says good morning to you personally, that really bonds you to that store, and you're much less likely to go to a competitor.
And Joe, I think people can pick that stuff up. You know, it's not just the words you say. I was at a store one time. I was at the cashier, and it was a young, probably a teenager, and she looked at me. She didn't look at me, first of all. She said, well, thank you for coming in. Have a nice day, the typical stuff. But she didn't look at me. Then I looked down at her cash register, and there are the words that she was supposed to say in big letters,
her
script, you know, laminated.
Yeah.
And so if her boss said, did you do your job? She'd say, yeah. But did she do her job? No. Because you could tell people she didn't mean it.
Right.
I grew up on a farm in Illinois, and I don't have a lot of original thoughts, but I remember my dad saying those animals, they can tell whether you're there in that pig pen or whatever to hurt them or whatever. And I think if animals can pick up that sense, people can pick up that attention too. they can tell if you really mean it or not.
Right.
That's very clear. When you're on the phone talking with some, getting some service over the phone, it's very clear whether those people are interested in you or just interested in following the script that they're in. Most of them, it's the script.
Exactly. And even though some companies start with a script, and maybe that's helpful in the first few days or the first few weeks of an employee's career there, once you internalize that, then throw the script away and just be sincere,
exactly.
Be authentic, be yourself.
Yeah, they still need to know what to say and what to do.
Right.
But those little nuances of eye contact and really
right.
sincerely meaning it.
Exactly.
It bonds you with that customer.
On the reverse side of that coin, whenever I'm talking to somebody at an 800 number or a customer service number somewhere, I always ask people, well, where are you geographically?
Yeah.
And that often turns into a conversation, and they warm up to you in a very different way than if they were just going through the routine.
That's a great point.
I used to have a friend who said when he called a certain catalog company to place an order, this was before online shopping, by the end of the conversation, he felt like he was talking to a family member.
Yeah.
And that bound him to that company. He never left. He's probably still buying from them.
Well, of course, online is growing so much, but so people still do with people.
Exactly.
And that's critical.
So the top of that whole chain is leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone under that leader is reflecting the behavior of that person. And we always say with culture, it starts at the top. The tone is set at the top. And if you're not in it authentically, if you don't really believe it, if it's just something you read last week and you think, well, this sounds good, so maybe I'll try it, don't, right?
And you have to live it on a regular basis. You can't tell people just one time. We're with a hospital in San Francisco, and safety was a key thing. So the CEO said every meeting has to talk about safety. But then he realized patient focus, internal customer focus was important.
Mm-hmm.
So he said every single meeting, you've got to start it with that message and end it with a safety message. You've got to keep repeating it over and over again.
Right.
Otherwise, it doesn't stick.
Right. And I don't think I've ever been in a meeting with Joe, no matter what kind of meeting it was, for what reason, that you didn't start talking about that.
You always talk about customer service, and what we found most effective, and I think this is true in most businesses, is telling stories. Tell the story about a successful encounter with a customer, mm-hmm. about how you sold something you didn't expect to sell, or how the customer came in and was surprised by something. Anything you can do where you have a success and you share the success with other people, it does nothing but build everybody's morale. Everybody wins when you tell success stories.
Right.
So there's a head and a heart part of this. You can tell the words, you can do the logical part, but the heart is what really drives people.
Yep. But,
yeah. And people that love it, you can tell. They're in it for that. And that's where they get their gratification, not with a paycheck.
They do.
So why is it important then to understand who my customers are? Isn't it obvious? And I know you said something early on, and I know in my early improvement days and quality days, we talked a lot about the internal customer.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't hear a lot about that today, but to me, that's where it starts. If we can't treat each other well, if we don't take care of each other as each other's customers and suppliers, then how are we going to take care of the external customer?
Yeah, I think, Mary, a lot of times people don't really understand who their customers are. We always tell clients, you need to figure out what business are you really in, number one. And number two, who really are your customers? And part of that is, like Joe with Tractor Supply, figuring out who really are the people that buy. The other part is having people clearly understand, of those customers, who am I really serving? For example, I think on the next slide we've got a little graphic. And if we think about that particular person, there are people or departments that support me. Then I support other departments. And all of us together are supporting those external customers. So too often people think about customers as just the external people that we serve, and that's obviously who we want to ultimately serve. But we can't do as good a job if we're not serving each other properly.
Right.
It's that teamwork and communication internally.
Right. And a lot of people in an organization are not external customer facing. So for those people, if they're not thinking about internal customers, then they're thinking, I don't really have to worry about this.
Yeah, I don't deal with customers.
I don't deal with customers, so I don't have to think about taking care of them. Yes, you do.
In our world at Tractor Supply, there's a 5 or 6% of the company that's in the headquarters building, and we renamed it many, many years ago the Store Support Center, And it focused us all on the fact that our job in the headquarters is to support the stores, because that's where you make a profit when a customer gives you some money. And so our job, and before all else, is to support the stores and make them healthy and productive. So that's our customer. Our customer in the headquarters is the people in the stores, thus the store support center. And it became a way of life for them. That's what we do.
What I love, Joe, is that you had people from the store support center go out and work in the stores every year because they wanted to see what the real world was like.
We do that as much as we possibly can. It used to be everybody, but with, a thousand people, it's a little difficult to get them all out there. But the objective is to get them all out there at one time or another so that they understand what it means to unload a truck and run a cash register and talk to a customer, because then you make better decisions and you make more supportive decisions.
And everybody needs to understand how important their job is, who they serve. A quick story, we're working with a group, actually this is a hospital also in Florida, and we mixed all the folks together to get communication going across, the doctors and the nurses and the team members. And this one woman worked in dietary, and she said, "I'm not sure why I'm here with these doctors. All I do is make the Jell-O. That's not important." And so she went through the training program, through our follow-up process. At the end, they summarized what they learned, and she said, "I didn't think this was very important. I just make the Jell-O. But if I didn't make the Jell-O, some of these patients couldn't eat. And I thought about the kids playing with the Jell-O. I thought about elderly people that hadn't had Jell-O in years. Mm-hmm. And now I can proudly say, I make the Jell-O." And you think about that. Everybody needs to understand who their customer is, what their job is, and how they create value for other people. And that drives motivation and achievement drive to do more of it and do a better job of it.
For sure. So I know, Joe, that you begin almost every conversation you have with a group of people, or at least you did at Tractor, with talking about mission, values and ethics. And Mike, that's an important piece of what we talked about in terms of what you teach. How do they relate to customers? Doesn't that really relate more internally? What's that connection with the customer?
I think people need to see the bigger picture of why we're in business. What business are we in? Who do I serve? Then why do I do that? Mm-hmm. If I can understand why I do it, create the value for people, that drives a stronger need to do a good job of it. Just like that person that made the Jell-O. And part of that mission is doing the right thing. Years ago, I grew up on a farm, and my father always said, do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And I think that needs to be filtered throughout the entire organization. I was reading a blog the other day about one of the best interview questions you can ask. And, these titles kind of grab your attention. And basically, the interview question was, at the end of the interview, to ask someone, if we really were trying to serve a customer and it took telling a little white lie, would you be willing to do that? And I thought, well, that's an interesting question, because if the person says, yeah, I'm willing to lie, or we're trying to set it up, well, you don't want people to lie, no matter what the deal is. So vision, mission is critical to start with, and leadership needs to drive that.
Right.
And all the training, all the leadership, the management needs to revolve around that. Our mission, our battle cry, we're changing the way the world sells and serves people. We want to help people get a positive view of selling. We want to be customer-focused. Now, that started back in about 1986, where the founder of our company, there were five of us sitting in his condo in Phoenix, and he came up with this and I thought, man, who are we, these five people, to make a difference like that? But because of that, I think it's what's helped driven us to work globally now to really make a difference. So vision and mission is critical.
And that stems from leadership.
It does.
Leaders set the tone. Every sales meeting we ever had and almost every other meeting we ever had, I would always talk in some ways about our mission and our values. And when you get to ethics, for example, that was always on the agenda. Do the right thing, always do the right thing, and it's simply when you do the right thing, you don't have to worry about things later on. But you see organizations where people are they think they're being forced into doing unethical things, but that always comes back to bite you in the end. But the example I like to talk about, and I may have talked about in the call before, but Volkswagen's engineers were lying and cheating.
Yep.
Now, whether the senior management was complicit or not is irrelevant. The senior management created an environment where they felt it was okay to lie and cheat. So the senior management is more accountable for that than the engineers who were lying and cheating, because they didn't create the right kind of environment where things like that would not happen.
And that's another place where just talking about it is really important, but also modeling it. You know, showing that you have a zero tolerance for it, and in your own behavior yourself. And I know you've told stories before about how you wanted to make an example of yourself for other people, so that they would know that there's zero tolerance here.
When we were on the road, we often would try to go to Olive Garden for dinner, because had a round table and you can get a lot of salad for nothing.
That's right.
And I always like to drink wine. Most people at the quid would have wine too. And I typically have a second, maybe a third glass. And when I get the check, I'd look down there and make sure they charge us for all of it. And frequently, they didn't charge you for the last glass of wine. And I made a point of saying, "Excuse me, miss, I think you forgot to charge me for the last glass of wine here." And that really didn't cost very much, but it sent a message to everybody. The boss is very, very ethical, and therefore we're all going to walk on that, on the straight and narrow.
It only takes one time of doing something wrong that
people
see that stuff.
Yep.
And it never starts with the big things.
No.
It starts
those
with
the little things. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Exactly.
It does. With us, we do a lot of work with coaching and sales and service. And the one slide I thought I'd share with you, our values and ethics that we teach, because a lot of people have a poor view of what selling is. A lot of people think of selling. Most people didn't go to college to get into sales.
Right.
They thought, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be something else. But yet sales is where it really happens. So the values and ethics that we stand for, things like selling is a mutual exchange of value. It's not something you do to people, it's something you do for people and with them. Trust and rapport precedes any selling activity and so forth. And when you sell something, it's a victory for the person, the customer. It's a victory for the salesperson. It's a victory for the company if it's the right match.
Right.
If you want repeat business, that's the way you need to sell.
Right.
Everybody needs to win in a good sales
relationship. Yes.
Your number two, selling is not something you do to people. It's something you do for them and with them, is true unless it isn't.
Yes.
And then you've got a problem.
Uh-huh.
So, again, leadership, maintaining that standard and making sure that nobody in your sales force is crossing that line. Because many times, you know, I think the poor impression of sales comes from sometimes heavy-handedness or being very aggressive or being pushy, and you get off the phone and you think, I wish I hadn't done that, you know. That should never be the way you feel when you're done with an exchange of sales.
It's a shame, Mary, because most people, we don't have very good sales experiences. I mean, you can't blame people for having a poor view of selling when there's no TV shows, no movies that talk about how positive that is.
Right.
You have bad experiences almost every place you go.
Right.
But yet professional selling is doing the right thing for customers. It's
right.
Creating value for customers.
It's providing an opportunity or
yes.
Whatever. It's meeting their needs.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Okay. So I saw in a comment on your website someone talking about sales as service and service as sales. And you might think that, and you've hit on that a little bit, but I want you to dive a little deeper into what sales has to do with customer focus.
We think they're really connected very strongly because, in fact, at times we actually pull up a definition. We ask people, how would you define service? And they'll do a little brainstorming and come up with a definition. And we'll ask them, how do you define selling? And sometimes they come up similar, sometimes they don't. But on the next slide, we've got those two definitions. What we believe is service is a process of identifying and filling needs people have and creating value for them. We think selling is a process of identifying and filling needs and creating value for them. Maybe a different title, maybe a different objective you're after.
Right.
That's really the mindset you've got. It's not how can I sell you something. It's how can I understand what your needs are and make sure I provide the right match for that. Because if they go away from that, the best business you've got is the repeat business and the referrals from that.
Exactly.
The good word of mouth.
So
the worst thing you want is a customer to walk away with a product that doesn't work for them.
Yeah.
That you want exactly the opposite. You want them to go away with whatever they're buying and it solves their problem, does their job, and they're satisfied with it, and all the pieces that go with that in terms of what value you give them, what kind of instructions go with it, what kind of information do they need, all of the support pieces so that they walk away with a complete solution to whatever their needs are.
If they've had a good experience along the way too, how they've interacted with you, that's just the icing on the cake.
Right.
Makes them want to come back.
Right.
Makes them want to tell other people about it.
It is a relationship business.
Sure.
It is.
If I were able to say, hello, Mr. Estaday, when somebody comes into a Tractor Supply store and then fulfill your need, you're going to come back every time.
Yeah. I'm going to go talk to Joe.
Yeah.
Joe can help do the right thing for me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So are you looking, is the profile different then today for that salesperson than, and maybe it was always different, but we had this stereotype in our heads about what, you know, what a typical sales type was, very out there, very extroverted, very talky, very loud, very in your face a little bit. So has that changed, or is just our impression or our internal?
I think in general, there's still a bad impression most people have of salespeople, unfortunately. And as far as personality, I found that almost any kind of person can be successful at sales. I mean, typically more people gravitate towards it if they're more outgoing and, you know, dominating kinds of folks. But the more reserved and detail-oriented person can also be very successful because it's in their intention. Are they willing to do the job? Can they build a relationship with people? And can they deliver on what people really want and need?
Right. And a lot of times those people who are not so out there are better listeners.
Exactly.
So I'm going to hear you better.
I mean, selling is not just talking.
Right.
It's really a conversation.
Right.
And people that can get others in a conversation, and I could share with you sometime a process of how they do that effectively, is how do you establish rapport so when you ask questions, people will tell you the truth. Someone said it's kind of like often when you call on a person, they've been asked the same questions by all the salespeople that call on them. They just got to kind of, in their mind, flip to the file drawer that says, okay, that's answer A, that's answer B, here's how I get rid of the salesperson. But the key is building a relationship so you can ask them really insightful questions that are meaningful, that relate to something that they have a problem with, and know how to then solve it. If they can't solve it, tell them they can't solve it.
Right. Always tell the truth.
Yeah. Works with a pharmaceutical group that the rep wasn't able to close the business at this pharmacy. So the manager goes in, and they find out that the drug that they were trying to sell wasn't as good as the one that the pharmacy was using. And so the manager said, well, actually, right now, what you're using is better than what I could offer you, but in the future, if you need something else, here's what else we can do for you.
Wow.
Went up to the car, and the rep was ready to shoot. The manager said, you just lost a sale for me. He said, no. He said, it's not the right thing. Well, a year later, something happened with that other relationship, and they called back in and had a $500,000 order for their product.
Right.
And I really believe if you do the right thing, it may not come back to you right away, but it's the right thing to do, and it'll pay off in the long run.
Right. So if it all starts with a leader, then what kind of skills must leaders have to create this culture?
Well, we could have about a two-day discussion on that one, Mary. It really does start with the leaders. I've got a slide there that says too often there's three key roles. If you think about a leader, they're a leader, a manager, and a coach. But in reality, what happens is most people just focus on the management part. They do the stuff. They do the one, two, three, four.
The things, the tasks.
They don't really know how to lead, and they don't really know how to coach and build people. So if we look at some of those skills, I mean, the leader needs to have ability to help formulate either, or he or she does, or with the team, the vision, what's the strategy, how do they communicate that, what's the direction. Not just do it all themselves, they need to know how to delegate. They need to create this environment of trust. Without that, it's not going to work. In fact, Google, I just read about a week ago, Google's done a lot of studies now within their company of what drives their most effective teams. As we expected, it came back that trust is the key. The most effective teams create an environment of trust. The leaders must also know how to work with, be a manager at times. Select the right people. You know, motivate them, solve problems.
Right.
And then you know how to coach people. Those are some key things.
And I think the coaching is probably, well, it may be the hardest or the thing that we pay the least attention to because it's important, but it's not urgent.
Yeah.
So it gets pushed to the back a lot of times.
You know, in the retail world, so often the purchasing part of the business is about how low can I drive the price. And that sometimes has some short-term benefits, and I've seen that happen. But more importantly is the relationship you're developing with your supplier, and you've got to be talking about the whole picture. It's not just about price. It's about how is it packaged, how is it shipped, what are the logistics, what kind of sales training do we need, can you understand the instructions, is it the right color, the right size? I mean, there are all these different things. So you work together in a team approach, and you deal with each of the different factors so that the customer, in this case the retailer, walks away with a product that the customer, the end customer, really wants, and it really works for them.
And that's a total value. You know, price is not the whole thing.
Oh, price is one component.
It is.
Important one, but.
A critical one. But too often people just look at price and they don't see, they may get a better price on the product, but they shoot themselves in the foot with all this other stuff.
It's the wrong product.
Yeah.
Or they can't understand it, or the wrong color, wrong size, all sorts of things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, coaching is really a key thing, and I think whether it's coaching or leadership, a lot of us know how to ask the right questions.
Mm-hmm.
The wisdom, someone told me one time, is not in knowing the answers. It's knowing how to ask the right questions. Whether you're a leader, whether you're a salesperson, or whatever it might be, it's knowing how to really ask the right questions.
Absolutely.
We shared a couple things. You talked about coaching. There's a lot of studies, as you know, about effective coaching. And I threw a few of these on the slide there, that people that are coached properly outperform their peers by 27%. They're more engaged. They have more discretionary effort. They're less likely to leave, so your retention of employees is stronger. So coaching is really a critical skill that often managers don't know. They may have been a good salesperson, service person, cashier, whatever it is, and they get promoted because they're good at their job, but they're really not taught how to coach and build other people. I mean, it's a skill that they need to develop of seeing more in people than people see in themselves often.
Right.
I think back over my life that the people that have touched me the most, I didn't think I could do it. I'm just a farm boy from, you know, outside of a town of 500 people in Illinois. I mean, what could I do calling on this big corporation? But people saw that in me, and I think that's critical for every manager, to look for that good in people, and how can I build that person? They don't always take you up on it, but create that vision for them.
Right.
Mike, I spent a large portion of my time in the stores with district managers and store managers and salespeople and so on. I'm always trying to coach and help and help people get better and listen to them and listen to their issues and so on. And today, after 10 years being retired, I run into people all the time or hear from people that I haven't seen, and invariably they go back to say, they'll say, Joe, I remember when you taught me this, or I remember when you helped me with this. It's all, that's what they remember most, is how you helped them.
Yes.
And that's the kind of thing that binds people to you. You talked about low turnover here. In so many industries, high turnover kills you because you have to start all over all the time. And when you work for somebody who's a good coach, you bond together with that person, you're much more likely to stay with the company. And that's another situation where everybody wins. The company wins, you win, and your boss wins when you do a good job of coaching.
I mean, it really does impact retention. Right. Often people don't have enough belief in their own skills yet. So it's often my belief and my manager's belief in me that will help drive me to make it and do well. But coaching is really, really critical. You know, somebody told me one time that we're really leaving our handprints on the lives of other people as a manager. Now that I've got grown children, it really impacts me that, mm-hmm. I mean, who are my children going to go to work for? I don't want them to be this manager that just kind of beats them up. I want them to see what I see in my kids.
Right.
And every person you hire, you didn't hire them because you thought they'd fail. you thought they would succeed. But it's easy to start looking at all the bad things and the things they don't have. Mm-hmm. The question is, how can I coach them in skills or attitude? Because it's not just their skills,
no.
It's their mindset, it's their attitude, it's their desire, it's their willingness to go the extra mile that what you're really looking for.
So then, how tell me a little bit about how you go about that. Because that, I think, is one of the things that frustrates people more than anything. We can teach them and train them skills. But if it's an attitude that is questionable or maybe already bad, I don't think I would have hired somebody that had a bad attitude, but maybe I didn't know. You know,
yeah,
we can all be on our best behavior for an hour in the interview.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes people slip in. Once I have that on my hands, how's the best way to deal with that?
Well, to kind of set up an answer to that, Mary, I've got a couple slides here that have an X in the middle and then some dots around it.
Mm-hmm.
And what that's going to illustrate is the X could be me or you or anybody that we hired. And the dots around that are beliefs. That throughout my lifetime I've created, you know, through situations where people told me, successes, failures, parents, teachers, coaches, I believe that I can make this much money, here's how I can act with people, here's how successful I can be, here's the kind of home I can, it's all these thousands of little things and big things. And if we could connect those dots, that's the paradigm in which we live. And all my actions, my feelings, my behaviors, and my abilities are bounded by that. So as a manager, it's being able to build a relationship to figure out where is that person. I mean, where do they live right now? What's their belief level?
Mm-hmm.
And not help them set goals that are so far outside of their belief that they may say, yeah, I'll do that, but they never will.
Right.
But to help figure out where that boundary is, help them set goals outside of that, help them stretch, and help them put a plan in place to do that. And then as they have a success, their beliefs expand. And all of a sudden you see their actions, their beliefs, their abilities expand. I mean, think back to Roger Bannister. Remember that name, who was the first person to break the 4-minute mile? And I believe he was either a doctor or in medical school, and his friend said, you shouldn't try to do this. You know, your heart would probably explode. You know, this is not physically good. You know, nobody's
right.
able to do this. But once he broke the barrier, within the next year, multiple people broke the 4-minute mile. So it's helping those people figure out, it's having a trusting relationship where they know that manager's for you,
mm-hmm.
figure out where they are, and help them set stretch goals. And help them to do what it takes to reach those. And by doing that, you're coaching people to continually improve. So that's one piece of that. A study we did this past year in conjunction with the Sales Management Association was on achievement drive. And for 30 years, I've been asking sales groups, sales leaders, if you had two groups of people, two groups of skills, you look at your top people, and why are they successful? Is it their product knowledge? Is it their hard skills? Or is it their attitude, their achievement drive, their passion? And almost everybody says that attitude and passion is the real driver. And that's what we found. We surveyed a couple hundred companies around the world, and we found that 84% of the people said that achievement drive is equal or more important than skills and product knowledge. It's that desire to improve, that's what you really want. So it's finding people, it's hiring people that have that drive, and then taking them wherever they are and helping expand that drive.
Right.
I neglected to talk about questions when we first started off. It's *7 for questions. *7 for questions, or if you're online, you can send in questions online too. So we're open to talk about anything you wanted to talk about relative to building a customer-focused culture, and anything you want to talk about in terms of sales. So get ready for that, because we'll be asking you very shortly.
So is there a way that you measure the improvement? Have you moved the needle? Have you expanded their beliefs or expanded their beliefs in themselves, I guess?
Yeah, I wish there was a pill or something you could just kind of give people
right.
an injection.
Right.
It's not. But yeah, we've seen that a lot, Mary. We're working with a very large insurance company right now, and the retention in that industry, only 14% of the people survive after 4 years. So 86% of the people fail.
Wow.
That's been the case for 30, 40 years, no matter what they do. So what do you do to impact retention? And we're finding major impacts. We've seen some groups getting up to 40% retention instead of 14%, simply by asking different questions in the interview, looking for folks that have high drive, looking for things they've done in the past to show they've gone the extra mile. It's not just, you know, check the box.
Mm-hmm.
But then learning how to coach them to expand that belief
mm-hmm.
and to believe in their people. We're seeing people all the time that may be coming in to quit, but they're turning around and they're staying because of the way the manager is coaching them. But it's really, and that's not just skill. We had, with another company, we had a person who was a school teacher and couldn't make enough money to put his kids through college, so he quit being a teacher and went into insurance sales, failing miserably. Had good product knowledge, was smart, just wouldn't make the calls. But the manager was able to coach that person for what he really wanted and help drive that achievement drive towards that goal. And within 60 days, his calls went up more than double. And all of a sudden, he made it and was very successful. And so it's like he had the same person, same people he's calling on, same product, mm-hmm. same product knowledge, different result, because the manager was able to figure out what really drives that person. What's the why? You know, Simon Sinek talks about
right.
find the why,
right.
and that really is a key.
Amazing.
One of the key things that we found at Tractor Supply is to tell success stories. What you know, if somebody does something great, tell a success story about it. And the more you tell those things, the more it builds everybody's self-confidence. If you tell a great story about a salesperson in a store who did something great, the store feels good, the individual feels good, you pass it around the whole district, everybody learns from it. Simply, that builds people's confidence in selling and doing anything like that.
That's such a great example, Joe. I mean, people can relate to stories and think, well, if they can do it, maybe I can do it.
Right.
It relates to their real life.
If they've seen somebody else do
it.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just a matter of having an example in front of them.
And if it's an example about a person that you're recognizing who that story is about, others say, well, I can do that too. And they thrive on that recognition.
Yeah, you do it once, and I'll do it one better today, and Mary does it one better
the
next day, and
we keep competing
with each other and telling success stories. It becomes contagious.
How can we better serve customers? Almost a competition.
Exactly. And that's really what we want, isn't
it?
We have an online question, and it has to do with how can middle managers help senior leaders become more customer-centric. In other words, how can I send the influence up? Maybe I've got the drive, and maybe I've got the passion for it, but I'm not getting a lot of support.
I love that question, whoever asked it, because we hear that all the time. We'll be doing a training class, and they say, well, this is great.
Is my boss going to take this class? Yes, exactly. We hear that.
And I'm sure you do. And what we want to do, and I'm sure you want to do, is start with leaders, make sure they get in there first.
Right.
The challenge is most leaders, they want the cliff notes.
Exactly.
They'll give, if it's a day course, they want the 30-minute overview.
Exactly.
And when we say no, they need more than the frontline people. Because the leaders, they need to know the whatever the content is that the people are doing, plus how to coach it, plus how to lead it.
Right.
So, but if you don't have that right now, all you can do is do the best you can where you can influence. Mm-hmm. We worked with the VA health system and had some phenomenal results. The whole state of Ohio went from the bottom four nationwide in patient satisfaction to the top four in 18 months.
Wow.
Pardon me. But it's because leadership really drove it. But then they would say, well, I can't affect the whole VA. You know, there's a couple hundred thousand employees. I can't do this. But yet I can impact my department.
Right.
As you start doing that, leadership recognizes it, and you can start moving it up.
Exactly.
So coaching, we think about coaching, though, Mary, is down. I mean, coaching can be peer-to-peer, and coaching can be going up.
Right. And lots of times
it's needed.
It's
tougher, but it's,
going up.
It can work.
Whoever asked that question, let me challenge you to go back to your boss and have the chutzpah to say to the boss, you need to be in this program because you're not doing what, you know, say it politely, but have it.
Challenge them.
Challenge yeah. the boss. And some bosses can't handle that, and others may develop tremendous respect for you for doing that. So take a chance and do that. And if you get fired, call me.
I'm coming to appreciate what you got.
There you go. But I think you are right. There's something to I can control what my corner of this world, and then people will notice.
Yes.
Once I've made the change, and people begin to notice, and that sometimes that's all you can do in a huge organization, but over time, people come to notice.
We've got a medical device client that a frontline person felt that way years ago, and this person moved up, and now this person's the president of the company.
Wow.
So you never know. You keep doing those kind of things, and opportunities
right.
open up.
Exactly.
Again, you do the right thing, and it comes back to you.
Exactly. Okay, a little bit different turn. How do I discover the expectations of my customers? You talk a lot about meeting their expectations, and sometimes they walk in the door. If it's a retail place and they're looking for a thing, they might tell you that I'm looking for a this, and there might be 14 of those. And how do I get from them what their expectation is, and not only for the item itself, but for the how it's going to behave and how it's going to perform for me?
Look, it'll be a lot of techniques, but I think the bottom line is it's asking questions and listening. And what that also means is sincerely being interested in the person, listening, body language. In a store, you don't just say, well, it's back in aisle 3C.
No, if you
take them there.
Yeah, if you point, I'm going to bite your finger.
Yeah. I mean, you need to walk them there and talk
right.
to them along the way and build a little relationship, ask a question. We've got one of our our colleagues that was building a home and didn't have any grass yet. So he went to Lowe's and he said, I need some grass. So he noticed this one's real cheap, this one's real expensive, and the salesperson there said, well, let me ask you some questions. Do you have any shade or is it all open? He said, well, it's all open. So he went through a series of questions, and he said, well, my recommendation is, given your lawn and how particular you are about how much weeds you want in your grass, I think I'd recommend this one. He said, well, this one's more expensive. He said, well, if you want this, this, and this, this is what I recommend. And he said, I'm so glad I did. He said, but if I was just looking for price, I'd buy the cheap one,
right?
And half my grass would be weeds. So it's asking questions. It's looking them in the eye. It's showing that you really are interested in solving their problem.
Right.
It's sincerely listening. And then hopefully having a recommendation that will meet those needs.
It's really about the mindset of problem solver.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a combination of skill set. You got to know how to do it, but it's more mindset than anything. Because people remember how they felt about that interaction more than anything. So you want to leave them feeling valued.
Right.
It's not just doing the steps of doing the process. It's do they feel like they were valued as a customer?
Exactly. So if I want to become a customer advocate and make the customer my number one priority, are there some things I need to do, and does that involve just me, or do I have to involve the team, or how does that all come about?
Well, again, it starts at the top. It really starts with leadership. But as a manager for a department, I need to have a regular brainstorming of what can we do to better serve customers. And it's amazing how many times we put groups in discussions, okay, what could we do? How could we improve this? How could we do, and make sure they know who their customers are. It might be how I serve this other department.
Right.
It might be how I serve an end customer. It might be how I answer the phone, whatever it is. But you get people sincerely brainstorming without threat of, that's a stupid idea. What can we do to get better? And then narrow those things down to what we can put in action right now. If you try to do 20 things at once, it won't
right.
work.
Exactly.
What's the highest priority and how do we master that? Recognize people to do it and do the next one. Before you know it, that attitude permeates the organization.
And when you're having those sessions and you're listening and you're the boss, if somebody says something you don't particularly care for, you can discuss it, but don't ever put them down or shut them down or argue with them, because once you do, you'll never hear it from again.
Especially in front of other people.
Yeah, what you need to do, when somebody comes with an idea you don't like, just say thank you. Make sure they feel appreciated that you listen to them.
because you really should thank them. Most people don't have the safety feeling to actually say what they mean. And you certainly want to create that environment so they're willing to speak up. Mm-hmm. That's really valuable.
*7 for a question.
Is there any difference between dealing with people face-to-face? There is a difference. I know there is a difference, but how do you manage the difference, I guess, is the question, between meeting people face-to-face. And I did some work years ago with a call center that was having some issues. And for one thing, when you're communicating over the phone, you're missing some of the message because I don't see you frown, or I don't see you with that questioning look on your face. I don't always hear that over the phone. So are there any things that we need to do differently when we're not face-to-face? Because a lot of times today we're not.
Well, it's so true. I mean, it becomes even more important than to listen and to almost pretend you're there with that person. Because if I'm just kind of in a rote, I'm doing the same thing over and over again, mm-hmm. and I'm listening with one ear, that's going to come through. People can pick that stuff up, just like they can with body language.
Exactly.
So it's an intense focus on the person listening, because that comes through the phone line.
Have you done any work, Mike, with call centers?
Oh, lots of it.
Because they have terrible turnover problems, I understand.
It's terrible turnover. We have challenges because often they don't want to take time off to do training. And the managers don't. I mean, it's more statistics of how fast can you get the customer off the phone and those kind of things. But the call centers that are open to our message, they see higher retention of their people, you know, increased sales or improved customer service. We worked at Duke Energy a number of years ago. They had 400 people in a call center, and they decided that instead of just answering questions of how do you hook up the electricity or disconnect, we've got all these products. It's like budget billing and outdoor lighting and four key products. So they said, we're going to turn these people into salespeople. And they had an increase of sales of 250% to 900% on those four products by helping them listen to customers better, ask a few questions of what their problems are, and solving those problems. And the customers were pleased.
Right.
So it's a challenge, Joe.
It is a challenge because if on one part of my brain I'm thinking I'm not supposed to be on this call more than 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Or I've got X number I'm expected to make today, then that's a distraction for me. I need to be able to take, you know, one call may take a minute, but another call may take 15, and yet the value of the 15-minute one is huge and may pay back hugely down the road. So I guess, again, it's a matter of getting leaders to understand this because the person in the seat on the phone is not making those decisions.
It does. These principles still work over the phone because still talking about people interacting with people. Another very large insurance company worked with their investment group, and people would call into this group to move their funds from that company to another company. And because they learned how to listen better and not just do it, but listen and ask questions why and what can solve their problems, it was billions of dollars of money they kept at their company that didn't flow out to other companies.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's a challenge because you don't have that body language.
Right.
But yet it still comes through the phone.
It still comes through the phone. And that listening, we talk about it in every class we ever do, in every session we have, in every conversation. There is no better skill. So no matter how good you are at it, get better.
Yes.
Work on it.
Yes.
And a lot of times people leave our retreat with that's one of their goals. I'm going to be a better listener.
And often I'm sure you find it's not the big things. It's things like that.
Exactly.
It really are big things.
Right.
And we intellectually know that. But it's not just good enough to intellectually know it. We've got to do it. We've got to practice it.
Somehow it doesn't seem significant enough or a big enough deal that I want to pay attention to it. But as you said, it's often not the big thing.
And Mary, these are just people principles I think we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a Tractor Supply, whether it's an insurance company, whether it's a hospital, it's all about people interacting with people.
Right.
We've had the privilege of working with companies all around the world. And whether it's in France or Pakistan or Vietnam or wherever it is, it's still people interacting with people, and that stuff works.
Exactly. So tell us about the three critical conversations. We've talked a little bit about the three people that are involved, the coach and the leader and the manager, but now we have the three critical conversations. Speak a little bit about that.
Yeah. What we're finding is that it's a simple way to think about how to help people improve, because people need to get better at customer conversations. whether you're in sales, support, service, whatever it is. So that's one conversation you need to get better at. How do I interact with? What kind of questions do I ask? How do I build rapport? How do I build trust with my customers?
How do I make my plan? It's my plan for success.
It may be pre-call planning before a sales call. Maybe how did the script I have on the phone, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where most training goes, and it's needed. But there's a second conversation that's almost always missed, and that's the conversation people have with themselves. Because if you think about how many conversations people have with customers in a day, they probably got 10 times that number in their head going on of what I can do, what I can't do. You know, I can't serve that customer. Oh, here's so-and-so walks through the door, and he's a nasty old customer, and that's what you're thinking in your head, and that comes through, and you don't serve the customer the way you should. So it's all this junk or positive stuff in your head that's missing often. So a third conversation is with your manager, with your coach. What kind of relationship do you have? Is the manager coaching you? Are you coaching up? What kind of relationship, trust do you have? If you think about those three, most managers know how to deal with the customer conversation, but they don't know how to help their people as much with the mindset. So we find that as people know how to coach people on their skills, that's important. It's critical. But you get the turbocharger if you can coach them to goal achievement and achievement drive and a passion and seeing a vision of what you can do in the future. Joe, I think about the retreat we did in Tupelo, Mississippi. And I will never forget that, 1991. And I think Tractor Supply was maybe, what, 200 million at that point?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, close to that, yeah.
And you got up and you said within maybe 5 years we're going to be $400 million or five.
And I double the size of the company in 4 years.
And I looked around the room at your managers and they were like, man, there's Joe. He's smoking something again.
No, that's right. That's exactly right.
A glass of wine. They didn't believe you, a lot of them.
But we went from 200 to, not to 400 million, but to 450 million.
Yeah, you beat the goal because you laid out the vision and you put things in place to make it happen. And look where that company is today. So I think those three things are critical. And what you were teaching about, you were doing skills, but you were building belief. And some more than others, but you were hammered on that, building belief of what we can accomplish.
And you continued to tell that message, to say that message on and on and on, so that people finally began to believe it.
Yeah.
And then they began to think about, well, what do I need to do to make that happen?
Yeah, one of the things that those of us in leadership roles lose sight of so frequently is how important it is to be repetitive.
Yeah.
It's like raising kids. You've got to keep saying the same thing over and over and over again so people never misunderstand where you're going and what you believe in. And it's easy to get distracted with all the little stuff that goes on. But as the leadership, as a leader, as a boss, you need to make sure that you're always setting the clear direction and establishing a clear set of values so that everybody knows where they're going and what we believe in.
Exactly. We have a few minutes left. I want to remind everybody to send us your question or *7 if you have one. And in the meantime, Mike, I'd like you to take these last few minutes. And you've shared some success stories with us, but tell us a story or two.
Mary, we love working with our clients, as you do, to see people change. Organizations change, but it's really the people within it that cause that change. I told you about the person in the cafeteria that makes the Jell-O, all the way that up to bigger situations. We worked with a pharmaceutical company where their particular drug had been flat for 10 years. It was a really good drug, but people were not using it. So we installed our interior selling program, and they went up about a 15%, you know, just learning how to interact with their customers better and how to sell the value of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And all the lives that are touched by that. Because it's not just what you're selling. If people get a vision of what it's doing for them. I mean, you weren't just selling post-hole diggers and those kind of things. You were helping people with a lifestyle that changed their life often. And if people can see that, people aren't just selling insurance policies.
It's not a thing.
Yeah.
Right.
They're selling the value of what that means to that family or their retirement, what they can do for their kids. We work with a lot of medical companies that sell hips and knees and stents and everything you can think about. And they're not just selling that product. It's what they're doing for that person's lifestyle or saving their life.
Mm-hmm.
But we're selling people on how to take care of their pets and their animals.
And
that's very emotional. That's
it is. I mean, it's not just dog food or kitty litter. I mean, man, it's part of our family.
It is.
So we need to help people see the vision of what you're really doing for people. And we've worked with a lot of different kind of clients all around the world, but whether it's enterprise, you know, selling more cars, which we help them do, or whether it's UCLA making their patient satisfaction go from the bottom nationwide to one of the top.
Wow.
And there they had an attitude of, we're UCLA. You ought to be thankful we're saving your life. We don't need to be nice to you.
Yeah, really. You should be thanking us.
Yeah, be thankful. So regardless of what it is, we're really talking about people, you know, understanding people, building relationship, and serving their needs.
Right.
Leadership driving that culture.
Right. And then the last slide here with the results, or not the last slide, but this slide, talking about results. These are really the things that matter.
Yeah. Key things that we want to help people do is improve customer satisfaction and loyalty, improve sales, help managers lead and coach more effectively. And it's a real passion for us. As I said, we're changing the way the world sells and serves people.
Right.
I'll be in Nice, France in April. We do all of our European trainers there, and we have folks from all over Africa and the Middle East and so forth come. And no matter where they're from, these principles resonate. And that is so rewarding to see lives changed and companies changed.
I'm sure. Wow.
Well, it's time to bring things to an end here. The name of the company is Integrity Solutions. They got a great website. If you're interested at all, take a look, and you can say you know Mike Yesterday, the CEO. And, Mike, we want to thank you very much for being here today. We want to thank you very much for all your contribution here. And with that.
And, Joe, to wrap up, I just want to say that I appreciate being here with you. Out of all the companies I've worked with over the years, I've always ranked you as the number one CEO I've ever worked with. So I just appreciate it. I'm honored to be here today. If anybody online wants to have me answer any questions, I mean, no charge, no nothing, you know,
right.
Feel free to get in touch with me or Mary, because our mission is to make a difference.
Exactly.
Thank you for having
me. Love
to
hear from you.
Well, you can call me, too.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Until a week from Sunday when I leave on a three-week cruise.
Well, there you go. There are the recording of this will be on our website within the next 24 hours. And for the slides, we will email the slides to everyone that signed up for it. So if there's anything else we can do for you, you can email us or be on our website. And otherwise, we look forward to having you attend future webinars with us. Thank you so much for coming today.